Hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast, your weekly dose of inspiration and exploration. Join me, your host, Sam Harris, as I discover how mindset can help you do incredible things through my conversations with the world's most interesting people, from tech billionaires to leading scientists, best-selling authors to notorious hackers. The goal is to increase our collective wisdom and attitudes to make us all happier and healthier, wiser and wealthier. Who doesn't want that? On the podcast today, we have Travis Jones. Now, Travis is a badass. He runs a growing gym chain, as well as a marketing business and a coaching business and a foundation for children. He grew up in a troubled home and he planned to have a career in professional sport before he was nearly killed twice. But he didn't let that stop him and he started his business ideas and he even got a tattoo just to win some free business coaching, which, it's quite a big step. I wouldn't personally do that, but maybe that's for you. He is just a really inspiring guy, though, to say the least, and we chat about some awesome things. We cover mindsets, of course, and the victim versus victor mindset, which is quite interesting. He talks about what makes a good coach, how to find a wife, how to raise money in a tight spot, the foolproof strategy to opening a new gym, the biggest tips and the biggest mistakes that people make in marketing, and how to bring up children. And yeah, it was just a lot of fun talking to him, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird would you say you are?
It depends on what you classify as weird. Some people probably say I'm a 13, and some people probably say I'm like a 3. I think most entrepreneurs are the weirdest people out there. We are obsessive compulsive. We can't let things go. We're bipolar most days. I think an entrepreneur has 11 traits that are very similar to someone who has bipolar. We're up and we're down every single moment, depending on what's going on in the business.
But yeah, so you said you started some businesses, but do you think you were always going to start businesses?
Definitely, man. When I was 18, I wanted to play sports professionally, and that took me down a different route. I had a contract in off-season with a rugby league team, and I caught something called meningococcal, which is a bacterial disease. I ended up in hospital in intensive care for 3 months. I flatlined 4 times. Then I broke my neck and a myriad of other injuries. I was like, okay, rugby league is not for me. And it pushed me down to a path of starting my own business, which is becoming a personal trainer. And then for the next 8 years, I've really focused on trying to be the best at that. And then from that, I felt like I was only helping 30, 40 people as a personal trainer. And I want to change more lives and I want to help more people's lives. So I'm going to open up my own gym. And then obviously I want to keep opening up gyms, change more and more lives. Since then, we've opened up a digital agency. We've opened up a business consulting company, a software company, and it gives us the ability to change more businesses' lives and impact on a greater scale.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of things. I mean, at the point where you mentioned flatlining, I was like, stop, I want to ask more questions. You had like your heart monitor flat right when you said that. Did you see the light? First question.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I remember massive headache, not feeling good. Went to the shower and I was just standing there in the shower. And the next thing I remember is I woke up in an ambulance. Supposedly I passed out in the shower. My mate knocked the door down. The ambulance said I probably had about 30 seconds to live if they didn't get to me then. And then over the course of the next 3 months, I was in and out of consciousness. I had kidney failure. I was not in a good space. And then I slowly recovered and got back to footy training. I went back to rugby training. And that's when I actually did my knee. So then I was out for another couple of months. And then I lost my contract. And then I tried to play for another team up in Sydney in a second tier division. And that broke my neck. And then I was like, I should not play rugby league anymore. It's not for me. I have not resilience to keep pushing through the injuries.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that seems like a good set of reasons to maybe stop playing. Jeez Louise.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you hear all those athletes that say like, oh, I got knocked down, I got back up again. But sometimes it's actually maybe a more sensible decision to be like, yeah, I'd rather not die.
I think everything happens to you for a reason. If you can try and go, okay, this is happening to me for a reason. I need to open up my perspective or I need to change my perspective. I'll take the blinkers off and go, what else is out there? And what is this trying to show me? I think if you can embody that in life, then everything gets a little bit less frustrating.
Yeah, thinking out of the box. I like it. So you didn't go start a business straight away. You went into coaching, right?
Yeah, I was working as a personal trainer on the side while I was doing my course. And I remember my lecturer at college was saying, you are never going to amount to anything because you're constantly suffering from distraction. You don't focus. And I was like, okay, thank you, Ian. I will now try my best to do something. I contracted a personal trainer. So I was like a franchisee. So I started running a self-employed business straight away. And I worked in a big box gym, Fitness First. I know they're in the UK as well. So I worked for myself inside a big box gym for about 8 years and really tried to do every short course possible to try and get as good as my craft as I possibly can, constantly trying to focus on getting the best transformations, helping the people the fastest possible way, understanding the education of transformation as best I possibly could, because I knew that the amount of money you get paid is based on the competency that you have in your skill set.
So someone that's a bit naive when it comes to coaching, such as myself, what are the competencies that you go through that I would be completely blind to?
I think it comes down to a lot of things, right? Like helping people understand nutrition for one. So it's understanding different macronutrients, protein, fats, and carbs, and how they interact inside the body and how they're going to get someone to not just lose weight, but lose body fat, retain muscle mass. Then we're looking at nutrient timings, setups for different people, looking at, I guess, training in general, looking at the different styles of training structures. We're focusing on strength, we're focusing on volume through the body, and each of those are going to get a different response. So it's having the education to get someone stronger and get someone to lose weight at the same time, but also give them a little bit of what they need, right? So it's fast results to keep them motivated. So if you can increase someone's expectancy, they expect to achieve a result, then all of a sudden their motivation will go up. If you can really nail down their why and help them understand why they're actually doing it, their motivation will go up. And then this is divided by essentially over their distraction. You have to look at their environment, look at their life distractions that they have in their work environment that's going to take them away from them getting this result. So we need to teach them, okay, let's go 7-day reward loop. You do this, it could be 4 training sessions, eat properly, and we track it 7 days a week, and you get this reward. And I think that's the biggest thing to sort of do as a coach is help someone with their nutrition that's best for them, help someone with their training that's best for them, help them progress, understanding how and increase motivation over a prolonged period of time so they don't lose motivation. And I think that's one of the biggest things. And the mindset side of staff is whole victim or victor mentality. It's taking people out of blame and justification and excuses and moving them truly into responsibility and ownership and having themselves to be accountable to someone. If you can do that and really get people to be a victor instead of a victim, then you start to have body transformations.
Cool. Yeah, it's really interesting. And last one on mindsets. As in, I guess everyone's completely different. Do you recognize that when you first start coaching someone, do you find that some people are really victim-centric, whereas others don't get ownership but just less bothered about going to the gym or something?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Some people are victims in different areas of their life without even realizing it. It's because of the limiting beliefs they have that they've placed upon themselves, or their parents have placed upon themselves, or their friends have placed upon themselves. So it's like, I'll never get abs, or I'll never make $1 million. And essentially, the more you tell yourself you can't achieve it, the less likely you are to achieve it. The stories you tell yourself become this self-fulfilling prophecy. It's easier to see someone who has a negative mindset than a positive mindset. They're low. They're monotone. It's very hard to communicate with them. They just a negative aura. They're sitting inside this space because they feel like they aren't in control of their world. The world's happening to them, and they start to tell themselves negative stories. Oh, I've got a slow metabolism, or this business won't work, or I can't find leads, or Facebook, my marketing algorithm changed, and I can't get leads coming out. They never come up with these positive stories because they're sitting in this negative state. And then they have these negative stories, and then it comes down to the strategy, and it could be the best strategy in the world. And if you have these negative stories where you're telling yourself that I can't do it, everything is wrong, then they'll implement the strategy incorrectly, or they'll implement the strategy half-assed, which then gives them the prophecy of it doesn't work for me. Whereas if you can lift someone's vibration and change them and move them into a higher state or a positive state, and then all of a sudden they start to sell them positive stories like, I haven't lost weight yet because I haven't found the right method for me. It's only a matter of time. So I think there are so many things that will grow a business or help someone transform their body, but none of them are really implemented ever correctly because of the story and state problem.
Cool. Fascinating. Learning far too much. So then You did like 7 years of coaching, and it sounds like you definitely learned a lot. You then found your wife. How did this all happen?
Yeah. So basically, I opened my gym and I was living in the gym for the first year, right? I had no idea what was going on and I had no money, no savings, no nothing. So I sold my car and moved into the gym and I was like, I'm going to make this work. And I had a couple of personal training clients that came across with me. My idea of marketing was literally walking the streets. So I walked up to about 100 people every single week, 20 people every day, and I offered them a free month of training. So it was slow grind. I learned a lot through rejection. I think that's the biggest thing with businesses, why they fail, is people's fear of rejection. So I was talking to prospect after prospect after prospect, and I had 3 months rent free. I started this gym. Then the first month was coming around to getting paid, or to trying to pay for my lease, which is $12,000. I was like, I don't have any money. How am I going to pay for this lease? So I wanted to think outside the box slightly, and I don't want to discount my current services to dampen my future. Groupons were big back then. So what I did was I called up Groupon. Okay, I want to do this deal for infrared saunas, help detoxify the body and help people lose weight. And they're like, oh, you don't have a website. So I'll build this website. And I put a couple of images off Google. I was like, look, I've got this infrared sauna inside my gym that I actually didn't. But I was like, hey, I've got this infrared sauna inside my gym. It's normally $100 for the month. I want to put it on Groupon for $19, 8 sessions. And they said, oh, okay, fine. That's fair enough. And back then we had pretty good cuts with Groupon. One of the girls trained my gym as well. I got 75% of the money instead of the 0% of the money. So I had 13 days or 12 days at this point before I was going to lose it. And everyone would have been right. And they would have been like, man, you are a failure and you shouldn't have done it. You're making good money and you shouldn't have opened the gym. Because that's what everyone says, right? They always tell you that you're doing the wrong thing when you're opening a business. And over the next 12 days, it sold $21,000 worth of sauna deals. It was over 800 sauna deals got sold. 2 days before I had to pay the rent, I got my check cut to me for $15,000 of this $21,000. And I paid $12,000 to my lease. And I had $3,000 left. So I called this company called J&H Saunas. And I bought a sauna for $2,000 because I had 800 people coming down to use the sauna. And my wife, she bought one of those sauna deals off Groupon. So that's how we met.
Wow. That's awesome. The next month you were able to make enough money. So if you said you didn't have much revenue.
Yeah, man, no, not really. The next month I was like, I'm not going to make it. So when I first started, I actually didn't have enough money to purchase equipment either. So I went to a local equipment supplier. They were like, you just started out in business, like supplying equipment for gyms. I'm just opening my gym. What I'm going to do is I don't have the ability to finance this equipment or pay you up front, but I will sign a contract with you that I'll pay you on the first of the month, every month over the next 12 months to buy the equipment off you. And if I miss a payment, you can just come and take it off me. And I was lucky enough, the guy actually agreed to that. So I had my equipment, but then I needed to find another $12,000 to make enough money to pay the lease. It hadn't grown enough from these 20 people coming in that I was talking to from the streets each week. So I need to do something different again. I went out to one of the guys I used to work with who was actually good at saving cash, which is not me. And I was like, I need to borrow $12,000 and I'll pay you $24,000 back in 12 weeks. And if I don't pay you back, you can take my equipment. Like I got $12,000 off him and I paid $12,000 back in 12 weeks. It was pretty crazy because I knew the trajectory was like a hockey stick, right? So we're growing fast, just wasn't fast enough. So month four, I borrowed 12K to pay that rent. And month five, I was there. Month six, my idea of marketing was walking the streets. It has to be a better way than walking the streets to get clients. And I saw this guy in the States. He was a business coach and he was good at social media as far as blogging and trying to get leads that way. And he had a couple of great ideas. And I was like, I need to be a part of this guy's mastermind. His mastermind was $20,000 a year and I cannot afford this. But he was running a competition at that time, which was whoever could represent his blog the best. Actually won a year of mentoring and he had two catch-ups in Vegas and all the products that he had. I was like, I'm going to win this. And it came over the 30 days. He was running this competition. There was pictures of people holding signs up on the Empire State Building and the Eiffel Tower and all that, representing his blog, which is pretty cool. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm sitting in Melbourne working 20 hours a day in my gym. So I drove down to the local tattoo store. I tattooed the guy's website across the back of my shoulder. I took a picture of that. I sent it in and he was like, man, you are crazy. And I won a year of mentoring. So that was my first coach. I tattooed his website to get a coach.
Awesome. That's a good commitment. I mean, you do seem to have quite a lot of tattoos. maybe less of a commitment than, say, like me if I've got no tattoos.
I didn't have a sleeve then. I had one tattoo.
Okay. Because that was your first one that started it. That would have been hilarious.
It's quite crazy, right? And then the business wasn't as much as crazy tactics. It was more so like, this is a line in the sand that I'm willing to do whatever it takes to survive. Month 9 or month 10 of my business, like, we started doing decent cash after the first 12 months. We started doing 500,000. I bought a new car, and then I saw this other mastermind internship with Facebook advertising, and it was 20,000. So I sold that car within 4 weeks, and I was back to having no car. And I went back and did this week of mentoring. So I started learning Facebook marketing. And that's when I sort of started getting into the online space. So I started an online fitness business that we shut down now, but it grew from, without any marketing, it went from 0 to 5,000 members and $50,000 a month online. I go on the radio, I was in the newspapers, magazines, and I grew because I had 32 affiliates. I didn't really even understand what affiliate was back then, but I had these 32 trainers around the world, and each of them put about 120 to 150 people into this program, and they were getting recurring revenue. And then after about 7 months, 8 months, two of my ex back then, we broke up, and I shut down that business and focused on the gyms again. I opened up my next gym, and then the next gym, and the next gym.
Wow, cool. How do you go about opening up gyms? What's the actual process?
So the hardest process is actually finding the location and getting council approval. I think that's been the thing that holds us up the most in our life. So you have about 12 to 14 weeks out before you even want to find something. You're just scouring multiple locations. We have a certain size for us that we want to open up, and it's about 400 square meters. I've looked multiple times to scale to the UK. That's just not a focus as of yet, because we coach so many people in the UK at the moment with their businesses. So we're looking for something that's a decent rent, more like a warehouse. There's no retail spot. We have to pay double the amount for the same square foot. So warehouse industrial, it's about 50,000 to maybe 70,000 pounds a year at the upper end. Once we've found the place for the next couple of weeks, we have to demolish stuff, build stuff, paint stuff, drop the equipment in there as well. And about 5 weeks out, we start looking for staff. We were fortunate enough that people reach out to me now to work for RBT a fair bit. I've got people moving around the world to work for us in Australia, which is great. We pay all our trainers full-time wages, and they get 4 weeks holiday a year. They have great security working with us. We put them through education with some of the best people in the world. We pay for a lot of that. When I started this business, I wanted to create an environment that I always wanted to work in for my staff, or if I was them, I'd enjoy it. So they have a lot of benefits, and we also allow them to, when they're doing one-on-one training, because we're a group training environment, they can take 100% of the money. So it can be very lucrative for them to work with us as well. So we find the manager, we normally poach from somewhere local. I'll just message a bunch of people, RBT is opening up in this area. And most people will go, okay, because most staff are underappreciated and they don't see the growth in their current business. And I always tell people, if anyone wants to poach staff from me and they leave, then yeah, that's my fault 100%. I clearly didn't pay them what they felt like they were worth. So we'll normally poach a manager from another gym, and then we'll fill the two or three staff underneath him with just other coaches, because the biggest thing you need is you need to have a strong manager that people respect and look up to. And then 3 weeks out, we start marketing. We get 450 leads and we'll make 200 sales. And yeah, on day one, we have 200 members. Our capacity is about 250 members for our style of gym. We're slightly higher, more expensive, and we'll be about 200 members out of day one.
Wow, nice process. So how do you find people on LinkedIn in that area?
Yeah, man, find people on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and just say, hey, we want you to be a part of this. Let's go.
That's cool. Then on the marketing side of things, if you're getting people like literally straight away, what's your tactic? How do you get those 200 people in 3 weeks?
I own a marketing agency as well. We do marketing for about 60 to 70 businesses. And it doesn't matter what the business is. Different industries, there's different levels of awareness. So what we'll do is we'll do a paid trial rather than a free trial or anything like that. Free trials, they normally cost the same with Instagram and Facebook to get a lead for a free trial as it does for a paid trial. But our paid trial offer needs to give them some form of results in advance. So we do a 21-day challenge or a 28-day challenge or something similar. And they feel like they're going to achieve an outcome. So it's a result in advance. It's a discount and it's an outcome they're going to achieve. They're like, oh, I can commit to 28 days. Oh, it's only £100, whatever it is. Oh, I get 16 sessions with a personal trainer. This sounds great. I'll commit. So they register their details. And as we've grown, now we have a sales team. Sales team calls them up, sells them over the phone, takes their credit card details, charges them, tells them to rock up to the gym. And each of our sales guys sells about 100 of those a month to each of our gyms. And each gym can hold about 40 people. So our salesperson looks after 2 to 3 gyms for us. And on opening, we can hold about 200 because there's no one else in the gym. A couple of salespeople sell for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, sell 200 of the 400, 450 leads. It costs us about $3 to $4 a lead. So as we scale it out, cost per lead goes up and you're spending about $6,000 to get the 400, 450 leads. But you're making about $40,000 before even day one opens because you're taking the payment details over the phone. They come and train with us for 4 weeks in a paid trial. And then we flip them into a £35 a week training. And all of a sudden, we do that again. We'll bring in 200 leads, 100 paid trials, and then we'll keep 50 of them. So we have, as of week 9, about 150 people paying us about £38 a week. So it's doing about £5,000, £6,000 a week, about £300,000 as turnover, tracking on as of 9 weeks of opening the business.
Wow, nice model. Maybe I want to start a gym. On the subject of marketing, what would you say are your 3 biggest marketing hacks for success in general?
It depends on the business, man. But I think a big one for branding, right? That's what I do now with RBT. It's hard to build that brand on such a scale. It takes a lot of money. And like, we're just not where we need to be for that right now. But if I was having, say I was doing a personal brand and trying to grow a personal coaching business or one gym or something like that, then all you have to do is you have to put out content every day or twice a day. I'm not going to sell it to you to be Gary Vee and put out 65 pieces of content a day. I don't think it's realistic for the average solopreneur or entrepreneur to put out 65 pieces of content a day. I think I put about 4 or 5 out, and I think that's about my limit. But the biggest thing for this is starting to put paid marketing behind your content. So what I like is understanding what's the 90 pieces of content that my tribe wants over the next 90 days. And I think everyone has to understand who their avatar is and who they're exactly trying to help. So you can't help everyone, you just help one person. And that means that every single time you put a piece of content out, you're thinking about that one avatar, that Julie or Mike or whatever you've called them and who they are. And that means you can talk to them on an individual level. So understand their problems and the solutions they need and match the two together. And then once you're putting this content out there, I want you to market that content, video content, page post content to all the Mikes and the Julies around that area. If it's a physical location, if it's online, segment your marketplace and really drill down into who you're trying to help. Just because you can target 50 million people on Facebook in whatever country you're in doesn't mean you need to target 50 million people. You can target 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, but actually talk to them in a way like, wow, this person understands me, and you can become the big fish in the small pond. Then I would say once you have your engagement level up and people are engaging with your content, you can create some custom audiences with Facebook. And now they know, like, and trust you because you become a trusted advisor in their eyes and people buy from those they trust. Then you create a custom audience from people who have engaged with your social media profiles, your Instagram and your Facebook. And this custom audience is, you can set a retargeting. So anyone who's engaged, liked, watched anything you've had, you retarget them with an offer. It's like, hey, you watched my content. Now, would you like to do more stuff with me? Click the button below and let's have a conversation. And they register, you jump on the phone, you sell them because clearly they want your help.
Okay. What would you say are your 3 biggest mistakes that people make with their marketing?
They talk about themselves, not about their clients. They're too afraid to put content out there because they think that they have these secrets that no one knows. So they don't want to share the secrets with the world. And if they share the secrets, then people will steal the secrets because they don't understand that it's not information that costs money. It's implementation that costs money. So you give all the information for free, but if someone wants to implement it, then yeah, pay for the implementation. That could be a done for you or done with you service, or you can sell them information for more, but then all of a sudden you're charging even less. It's like a DIY situation. And so the more it's DIY, the less you can charge and the less results people get as well. Like Napoleon Hill says, the key to success is to find a mastermind group and have them to keep you accountable every single week. I think that is the key to success, to have a coach in whatever area of your life you're trying to improve to keep you accountable every single week. So they don't actually sell high price items as well. And I think they need to sell a higher price. They sell it for cheap because they're worried and they don't want to put any money behind their marketing. They don't really expand their audience. I think that's such a crucial thing when we're looking at this. They have to understand that, yeah, you should have higher prices if you are good at what you do. You should raise them up as high as you possibly can, because if someone, it hurts someone to pay you to work with you, then it's okay, because that means they're going to take you seriously. And I think that's one of the biggest things. If you don't charge enough, people don't take you seriously and they don't get the best results.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. Thanks. What do you think is going to be the next big thing in marketing?
I think it will be continue to be the rise of these personal brands. I think a lot of personal brands are creeping up inside of businesses. People want to engage with people. So businesses are more so having more and more figureheads that they're trying to grow through social and trying to create their own presence. So I think that's a big thing that they're trying to do.
Do you think that's why you're doing podcasts?
Honestly, I don't even know why I'm doing podcasts.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
Yeah, it's not a reason to try and increase my personal brand. I like doing podcasts because I believe that so many people are held back by their potential because of their limiting beliefs. So because of this, it's crucial to help people understand that you can achieve anything you want in life. And that's why I like to do it.
Cool. Yeah, have you heard of Martin Seligman? He did a lot of research on learned optimism and learned helplessness. Learned helplessness is basically the stories you tell yourself that confine you into beliefs that you can't do things when actually you totally can. The study they did where elephants, when you tie them to a stick when they're a baby, they can't get away from the stick because they try the first time they do it and they can never get away. But then they'll grow to this huge adult. But if you tie it to the stick that it was tied to as a baby, it won't ever try and get away from it.
Yeah, I've heard that one before, which is the tied to a stick with an elephant, which is crazy, man. People are powerful beyond measure, but they're only powerful beyond measure if they believe they are.
Yeah. Nice. What do you think is the future of the gym industry?
That's an interesting one. I think there's going to be a lot of a fall over the next couple of years of these micro gyms, which essentially I have. And I can throw a rock at about 9 different micro gyms. There's Orange Theory, there's Core 9, Round 12, Round 9, there's Coaching Zone.
Okay, so it's not a quiz. I believe you.
It's crazy. Everyone's trying to start their own franchise at the moment because they believe that's the key to success, is starting a franchise. I think what will happen is these micro gyms will phase out because they're cannibalizing each other. And it's the easiest time in the world ever to start a business right now. That means it's the most saturated because people can start a social media profile and grab a building. All of a sudden, they can start a gym or start any type of business whatsoever, right? And they aren't competent in what they do. And that's the problem. People who aren't competent trying to change people's lives, and then they aren't changing lives, and it actually hurts the industry. So I think a lot of these micro gyms fail and fall. And whenever someone falls, there's always going to be an opportunity for another person to actually take up the reins. So I think there'll continue to be one or two powerhouses in the micro gym space. And I also think that people don't want to train, man. Like, they want a pill. I just think the pill will come out, and in the next 10 years, less people will probably train, even though it makes you feel good or increases your energy. I'm sure there'll be a pill for that as well. Pills will start to come out, helping people actually achieve the results that gyms are trying to get for them. So again, it will actually dampen the industry, and you'll see another downturn as well. And I think that's the future of it.
Wow.
It's a pretty negative future.
Cool and shit at the same time. Fitness pills sound good.
Yeah.
Like, a gym sounds bad. So you're focusing more on building your other businesses then, if you think the gyms isn't a good long-term strategy?
No, I'm not, man. I'll get the gyms from 21 gyms now to about 50, 60 gyms, and I'll sell. The goal for us is to sell for about 60, 70 million in the next 3 or 4 years. And if someone can take that off us, fantastic. I don't know what they think about the industry going forward. That was just my insights. They could have 7 years and they can make great money over the next 7 years. And that could be what their ROI they're looking for is. We'll continue to grow our other businesses either way and continue to grow the gyms. We do online stuff as well. We create the software and the app. That's a pretty big thing. Like, MyFitnessPal sold to Under Armour for $480 million. So the software space is a massive space. Over the last year, we've been building a software. We have about 8,000 end users already, and we haven't even started marketing yet, which is a fantastic thing.
What does the app do that you've been building?
We create a software for gyms, personal trainers, coaches to be able to track their stress, motivation, sleep, the nutrition, as far as exactly what they're eating. There's complex as far as tracking macros or non-complex, like portions of food that you're eating as well. Everything the person tracks through the app gets directly pushed straight back into a portal, which the coach can see every single one that they're looking after. So it shows people who's at risk as far as members. It shows people who is on track to achieve results, who is not on track to achieve results, because they're also tracking their results inside the app as well. It gives them 7-day, 14-day, 30, 60, 90-day snapshots and allows them to push out programming, allows them to push out meal plans into the app. So it's two-way communication with a gym or a trainer or a coach with hundreds of clients at the same time. So we're trying to create a closed loop network for coaches, personal trainers to be able to use this. That's phase one, which is get 1,000, 2,000 coaches on board and turn it into a $2 million a year business over the next 9 months. And then the end users from that is 200,000. And once we have the end users around the 200,000 mark, we'll flip it to go B2C. And we'll have a lot of artificial intelligence built in. So it's like Joe logs into the app and he is an office worker and he's 32 and 15 kilos overweight. This is the best diet for him. This is the best training for him. And he can just monitor himself through the progress. And I think that's the end game for us with the app is then go, cool, let's scale that to a couple of million people on this app. And on the way to doing that, someone can come in and buy us.
Nice. Good plans. Okay. Then in terms of your other businesses, you've also started a foundation?
Yeah, we have a foundation at the moment. So we give a percentage of everything that we make towards our foundation, which is if not now, then when. So for that, our goal is to help 1 million kids over the next 10 years with food, shelter, education, and just have a better quality of life. So that was a big pusher for my wife and for us to continue to push that forward. I think it's entrepreneurs' duties to try and make as much money as they possibly can make to then give some of that away to those who can't make it. That's a massive thing for us, is trying to help as many kids as possible.
That's really cool. Yeah, I'm planning to do a podcast for a charity and raise start raising money for cancer, which I'm quite excited about. Did you ever hear the Wear Sunscreen song?
No.
It's a good song. It starts with Wear Sunscreen and it just comes up with like loads of just amazing life advice. I'm just going to interview celebrities and get them to tell a story behind that line to make it just a bit more interesting than just a bunch of quotes. And then because it's about wearing sunscreen, it can be about raising money for cancer. Because you don't need to actually get rich first to be philanthropic. You can still create value straight away, is my theory.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So yeah, watch this space. It's going to happen. Yeah, it's nice to hear people actually doing philanthropic things. So your wife just came up with that as a suggestion, or what made you guys choose kids exactly?
We talked about it for a while. I really enjoy it. And the reason why we chose kids, because we love kids and we love the idea of being able to help us help kids have a better quality of life because they can impact those people over the rest of their life. So I think it's the largest possible impact you can create.
What would you say has been your favorite or most influential book?
A Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. He is a Holocaust survivor, also a psychologist. He framed a couple of terms around understanding stimuli versus responses that really resonated with me, that anything can happen to me, but I get to choose how I react. Someone could be in such an environment where you think that the only way is to react in a certain way, but he still chose the way he wanted to react. I really enjoyed that book because it opened up my eyes. I was like, maybe I am reacting poorly in some scenarios and how can I change that?
Yeah, sounds like a really good book, pretty deep. What is the kindest thing that anyone has ever done for you?
Probably lent me their couch when I was homeless.
Yeah.
I've been a couple of times that I haven't had a house, I would say, growing up. And I'll be like, okay, I have no house and I don't know where to live and someone's giving me a couch from up. And I guess that's probably one of the nicest things because if not, I would be on the streets.
Yeah, that's pretty handy. What would you say is your thing? If I was to ask your friends, they'd be like, oh, yeah, Travis is always doing that.
I think my thing is business, but I think also my thing is helping people feel better. I hate to label myself as the business person because I spend so much time with my kids. I got two kids. I switch off at 5. I go home and I start up 9 normally. I've created my life so I can be with my kids as much as I possibly can. I leave work at 3 p.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays to go to gymnastics and karate. I think if they'd say anything, it's he goes all in on everything that he does.
Cool. Nice thing for them to say. What would you say is the most vivid memory you have from childhood?
I was driving down a freeway and my mom said to me that the day you were born was the worst day of my life. And that's probably the most vivid memory.
Wow. How did you feel at that point?
I think I was 11 and I felt like, okay, this is life. That was literally it, man.
Yeah, that's deep.
I guess we hold on to things, but then you forgive and forget, right?
Yeah.
Some people were never meant to be parents. So that was her reality at that time. And I can't take her reality on board. She wasn't born to be her parent. And I think I can't hold that against her.
Fair enough. So what do you think about all this talk about what you need to do to be a good parent and how to optimize the mindsets of your children? And you've turned out pretty successful. And clearly your mom did not pay any attention to any of the things she should have been doing by the book. So what do you think is the right way to bring up a child?
I honestly don't think there is a right way, right? I think for any of my parents' flaws, I don't think that I had the best childhood raised up, but I did the best they could. And I think if parents can just do the best that they can with what they're given, I think that their kids will turn out okay. But you know what? Humans are humans, so they might not turn out okay. And you could give someone the best in the world and all of a sudden they become a drug addict and they kill a bunch of people. So you don't know what's right or what's wrong. The only thing you can do is do your best and then hope that your best is enough.
Yeah. Deep psychology things. Nice. Have you read a lot of psychology of bringing up kids, or are you just optimized for enjoying the time yourself?
I haven't read too much about bringing up kids and all that sort of stuff. Probably should, but it's just having as much fun with my kids as possible. It's helping them understand what's right and what's wrong. It's allowing them to have a bit of free will as well. I think that's my parenting.
Yeah. To be fair, on your mum, I mean, imagining having a little Travis around could have been chaos. So I don't know if you've got two little Travises now. Or
yeah, exactly. So true.
Yeah. She probably did a great job, in all fairness. Is there anything that I haven't asked that I should have asked?
Not really, man. We cover a wide spectrum of everything from business to your mindset. I enjoyed the podcast. It's really good.
Cool. Thanks. Is there anything you want to ask me?
Honestly, not really.
That's fine.
I just enjoy these podcasts and it was great having a chat with you.
Nice. Well, yeah, if I'm ever in Melbourne, I'll come say hi. My sister lives in Melbourne, so it could actually happen.
Yeah, look me up.
Yeah, sure.
Travis Jones Entrepreneur is Instagram. I think that's the main place I sort of hang out. It's just Travis Jones Entrepreneur on Instagram.
Nice.
Thanks so much, man. Conversation today has been fantastic. You have a great day.
You too. You've just listened to an episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your preferred app and give me a good rating, as these go a really long way. If you are unable to give good feedback right now, try sharing the show with a friend who will, or just wait for the show to improve. If you have any ideas for the show or you just want to chat, then please reach out to me on Twitter at SamHarrisTweets or Instagram at SamJamSnaps. Show notes and other links to topics discussed in the episodes are available at the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com. Thanks so much for listening. Give yourself a big hug from me. If you're with a friend, give them a hug as well. And I hope you enjoy your next podcast.